Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. You're now live on the Middleman Radio. This is the Middleman Talk Show. This is your boy, Al.
This is Kevin.
And this is Nick. Jim.
Here we go again. Here we go again. Now, who go first, man?
Well, Jen goes first, but I thought that Jen would be in a little bit later in the show, so that's my fault. Jen, you are always going first. My apologies.
Apologies accepted.
Hey, Al.
Yo.
You know something, man? Something I ain't did in a long time. I got to do
that. Smash that button. I'm going to smash that button.
You
got
to do it. It's only right, man. Like, you know.
That button will not be here next week, ladies and gentlemen. And non-gender conforming individuals.
I'm just saying, man. Hey, they did it on key, too, Al. They did it in sync.
They did, man. It was like they was a singing group or something, you know. Nick and Jim.
Yeah. Don't
I
be a hater all your life,
you
sir.
Stop.
It's just gotta stop.
Oh, God.
Man, how's everybody doing this week, man?
Wonderful.
It's been
man.
Interesting week.
Yeah, definitely that, man. Just observing all these people going out to get their hair done.
Right. I got my Lysol IV in right now.
Right. You know what I'm saying? You got to have that, you know.
Is it just me, or was that like the dumbest conversation that he ever had? Or, I mean, this dude, man, then he had the audacity to come back and say, oh, I was just playing. You're the president of the United States. You at the podium talking to the nation, and you saying you were playing.
Well, I'm not surprised by him. What's funny and ironic to me is all of his supporters who say, I voted for him because he says what he means, and now are defending the fact that he said that he didn't mean what he said.
Exactly. Exactly. And then to speak on the disinfectant comment anyway, you had people defending that and also showing you what they felt like he was talking about, like giving you a demonstration with UV light, with tubes and some disinfectant. And this one particular person had a whole dissertation of how it should work.
I say let him keep trying.
Right now.
I say let him keep trying. Look, I've listened, and my opinions are not that of the Middleman Talk Show or Middleman Radio as a whole. My opinions are my own. If you have a problem with that, please holler at me at Nick Eden on Twitter. But let me say this. If you Trump-loving supporters out there want to try to disinfect your body with bleach and all this stuff, I say go right ahead. To me, that's natural selection. Go right ahead.
Oh Lord! Did you figure out that movie that I was talking about? Have y'all ever seen this movie? Like in the future, Terry Crews was the president, and everybody was like real stupid. They were using
Idiocracy.
Gatorade.
Yeah.
To,
It's called
Idiocracy. Yeah, because Owen Wilson's brother played in it.
Yeah. So,
is that
the direction that we're going in America?
We are absolutely going that way.
Bro, like you said, Nick, they're literally out here trying to put bleach in their body to cure this.
More power to you. I don't know which amendment covers putting bleach in your body, but I'm all for it. Go for it. Do your thing.
Now, the next part of it is, I'm trying to understand this whole Second Amendment thing, because he's pushing this whole, well, to protect your Second Amendment, you need to get out and be free and do this and do that. I'm like, what do these two things correlate with?
They don't.
The right to assemble a militia, man. So I had to ask my wife, too, and you know, like, part of the Second Amendment, you know, talks about, you know, forming your own militia, being able to do that, and to bear arms for that. So I don't know if that's the reason why, so they can assemble with their rifle.
That is, Al, you know good and well, that is not the reason why he is saying that. Let's be honest. That is not the reason. So first and foremost, let's put it into perspective. Let's put it into perspective. You have a group of people protesting that they're assembling and protesting the fact that they can't assemble and protest. You're literally doing it.
But we can do it.
We know that is a dog whistle. We know that is a dog whistle. Plain and simple.
But shout out to Governor Cuomo, who, like, he straight ripped a reporter, a new one, because he was like, people need to go back to work, and people are protesting because of this, and, you know, what's worse than not having a job? And he was like, death.
First and foremost, like,
yeah.
The majority of people really don't want to go back to their jobs. Like, if we were given money to sustain the lifestyle that we're trying to live, like, nobody would be in a rush to, or I don't even think that it's a vast majority of people who are crying about going back to work.
No. And also, aren't they proposing possibly giving out $2,000 a month now?
That's
aren't they proposing that?
Don't hold
your
breath.
It's got to get passed.
Yeah. It's proposed in the House. It's not going to make it past the Senate. Like, it, you know, and folks, elections matter. That, you know, that's all I can say. Elections matter. What I will say is, some of these corporations are going to find it really difficult, the ones that have shifted so quickly to remote work, to demand someone come back into the office after this, if it blows over, whatever the case may be.
Right.
It's going to be real difficult for them to say, oh, you have to come into the office, when it's like, well, no, because for the last quarter, it's for the last 90 days or however long, we've been working from home, and it's been working just fine.
Right.
I'll just be darned.
Yeah.
But the thing about coronavirus is, it's a we situation. If it was just you and you want to risk your life, then fine. But you have no right to risk mine. You have no right to sentence me to death. And that's the problem that they do not get with coronavirus. They cannot conceptualize the whole we thing. If you go out, you might have the sniffles or sore throat. I might die. And no one has the right to infringe that on me because you want to get paid. And I agree with Governor Cuomo. He said, if you want to work, go apply for an essential job. Otherwise, stay your ass at home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Watch
true story. True story.
Oh, man.
And let me also let it be known, because I know several people who work in his administration, it was absolutely no problem for him to immediately tell them, go home. Any work that we are doing can be done remotely. He walks the walk. And he talks the talk, and he walks the walk. So I want that to be known. Because, you know, depending on your news outlet, it may be fun to say, well, he still has his employees working. And that is true. They are still working, and they're working from home.
Right.
Well,
right.
Somebody come help Brian Kemp, please. Brian Kemp is an idiot.
Well, the only thing he knows how to do is
rig
elections.
I almost feel sorry for him. because I think that Trump encouraged these governors, especially the Republican ones, to stand by him and be like, I'm going to open up. We're going to stimulate the economy. And then he got on TV and turncoat on them and left them hanging high to dry when it didn't work out the way that he thought it would.
He flipped on Kemp like Gabby Douglas. He's like, I didn't say that.
Right.
Look, I'm going to tell y'all something. Everything that they said that Obama would be stereotypically, that's Trump. Trump is a stereotypical N-word. Like, say what you want to. How many times you rolled up on your homeboy, hey, man, you said, no, I ain't say that, man. That's exactly what you got to say.
Yeah, that's him all the way, man. Kemp was looking so crazy. He was like, well, I don't give a darn about politics right now. I mean, he sounded like a cowboy. But I'm sitting up there like, bruh, you put yourself out there. This guy just basically ran over you in a four-wheeler, came back with the 18-wheeler, and then hit you with a train. About him like 3 days in a row.
And then told you to like it, and you did.
But that's his boy, though. That's his boy.
I support Trump.
That's his boy. Well, on to today's topic, we definitely want to thank everybody for tuning into the Middlemen Show today. I know we can go on and on and on about these governors out here and Trump and everything else, but we really got to talk about some other things that are in more important means right now, which is, what are we going to do next? Will Biden be enough in 2020? This is part two of the show that we did last week. If you want to listen to our previous show, you can definitely go to blogtalkradio.com/The Middlemen. Click on Will Biden Be Enough, Part 1. You can definitely check us out here, what we had to discuss on that. We talked about the black vote, what do we want from Biden, you know, what should he do in the next election. So on to today. With the possibility of mail-in voting and electronic voting being introduced in some states, how will voting change? What should a process for both for voting look like, and which one do you trust as a voter? All right. Other countries have placed their elections on hold to focus on the coronavirus at this time. Will the U.S. do the same? Will we postpone our voting? That has been something that has been discussed. Should our vote be all we give, or should we do more? Examples, like should we go out and donate more, you know, go to phone banks, send out mailers to make sure we get people aware of what to do, how to vote, get the word out, all right? When it comes to the black agenda, instead of waiting on politicians and preachers to present what we want for our community, what do we need to do to come up with our own agenda? Like, what do we need to do to move forward with the progression of black America? And finally, why don't we, the African-American community, carry the same energy about the presidential election into the midterm and also local office elections? Local office elections is very important to us on the lower levels. We definitely need to discuss that. We definitely want to hear your voice. The number to dial in and place a comment is 516-387-1542. If you're on your phone, you can definitely press the number 1. We'll definitely get to you. But on to the discussion of today. So let's go into what we should do as far as the black agenda, waiting on the politicians and preachers. Like, what should we focus on? What should be our target to ensure that our voice is being heard and to make sure that the person that we're voting for is going to support that?
So let me say this, because, Al, you bring up a very important aspect to this. This is nothing against preachers, and it's nothing against politicians. When it comes to things about black agenda, the black agenda, you got to look at two very important aspects of it: civil rights and economic equality. If you do not have lawyers and business people in these meetings, what are you doing? What you it makes no sense. If you don't have people who are used to negotiating, people who mm-hmm. are used to it, you need to have economists in there. You need to have people in there who know how to look at market trends, how those market trends affect
Correct.
Communities of color, particularly Black communities. And then you have to stop looking at us as just as if every Black person has the exact same thing. I believe in a 10-point agenda, and this kind of this will roll into, and we'll talk about this later when it comes to local elections. A middle class Black person in Mississippi is not going to necessarily have all of the same agenda points as a working class Black person in Georgia.
Right, right.
Do you get what I mean? It's such
I mean,
a nuanced conversation that needs to happen, which is why I don't agree when a president or a presidential candidate says, this is my Black agenda. Because that's to say, well, all Black people are the same and all Black people want the same thing.
Right, right.
Nick, if I may, the thing is, I think a lot of times people put us in a box and think that Black people are monolithic when we think and how we react and act in our communities. Like you said, Nick, every community is different, even from a standpoint of income and understanding and you know, even just intellect itself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking
yeah.
at the whole basis of politics, somebody may not be afforded to the proper information of what they need to look to or look forward to find
right.
out more about that candidate, laws, what should be passed. Because, I mean, like you said
mm-hmm.
in one of our questions that we posed, our local elections, a lot of people don't even know their aldermen. They don't know who's their – some
right,
people don't even know
right.
their mayors.
Right.
So
right.
With the, we have to craft an agenda that would fit our people, that would be more fluid. Because, like, you know, it cannot be one
right.
stiff piece of work. Because if it is, anybody can chip away at that. They can attack
yeah.
it.
And, right. And to build on to that, you know, Kevin, like, with preparing for that and doing that, like Nick said, every community is different. You know, we had to look at the socioeconomic statuses of, you know, all of us, right? You know, especially where we live, depending on, like, which state you live in, too. Certain things,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, necessities are different. Your outlook on life is different. How you were brought up is different as well, too, which affects your views and also affects your needs and wants. And so when you think to that standpoint of, like Nick said, you cannot put one particular agenda and think it's going to fit cookie cutter for everybody, that it's not going to work. We have to have platforms like this where we discuss these things, where we actually meet up and create a list and put something together to where it, you know, the language is to the point to where everyone is understanding the needs of what we want. Because a lot of the language that we see now when we read these bills or we read these things that politicians are putting in place, like the normal person who don't necessarily read all these things all the time may not understand, and their needs may
right.
not even be addressed on there. Like, it's more than that. We have to have more substance.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think on a smaller scale, I think that we need to rewind back. Sometimes we have these big ideas that we go and
mm-hmm.
like I think Nick said, we put a preacher up there, or we put an Al Sharpton, or we put someone up there that doesn't necessarily represent, you know, an everyday working an American who's African American or
Correct.
Our community.
Correct.
And we don't
Correct.
Small down and start small, but we put these big giant like ideas out that are so in the sky, and they're not conceptual. That they're totally, you know, way out there, and we need to start small. Start, you know, demanding space. In one of the things that I think is most important for us is we need to start demanding spaces in the decision making positions. You know, we
that
need to start
crazy.
Lobbying against us and say, why aren't you in our community? Why aren't you running for an election? Why aren't you
mm-hmm.
doing for this position? Why aren't you trying to be DA? Why don't you put yourself in these positions so we have a voice at the table so we can start? Until then, we can't even have the agenda.
That is correct.
Right.
Because
I absolutely agree.
Because why are you at the table and you're not, you know, following through, or you're just there just to be there? Like, what are your, yeah.
Can I give you guys an actionable step? An actionable step that I've seen in at least three of the myriad of cities that I've lived in. Neighborhood civic groups and civic clubs are the best place to start, right? You can form it as a nonprofit. You can form it as a, not a super PAC, because that goes into a little bit, but a political action committee. But let's say at the base of it, you form it as a political action committee. So let's say we all live in the same neighborhood, and we say, you know what, we're going to form a political action committee. And this is comprised from people from within our community. Within our community, we need this, 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 and this. These are 5 points that we need. We have the support of the community, and we will go to our local and state officials and say, this is what this particular community of this demographic needs in order to have our endorsement, our vote, and in certain situations, our manpower and money power. You must adopt these 5 points of this agenda.
If
you do not, we will either go to your opposition or we'll run our own candidate. But you won't have the support from this. And that's how you start to make those changes. Because a more real-time example, if you look at Atlanta, one of the things that President Trump touts all the time is these opportunity zones, right? Now, we know in actuality, and we can have this discussion later, that it's nothing but a tax shelter for the rich. However, opportunity zones, there is something that's good that you can take out of that if you have capital gains. If you don't have capital gains and you just happen to live in a place like Atlanta, where most of the places that are zoned for opportunity zones, you can still positively affect economically disenfranchised people in that area. It can still work.
Right.
But in a place like Gulfport, Mississippi, where I live, it's mighty funny when you look at the opportunity zones, they are all zoned right outside of the majority black neighborhood. So black people can't even participate in the opportunity of these opportunity zones because it's completely zoned out. That is a point of an agenda. That is a point of agenda. We want the opportunity zones in this area rezoned so that we can take advantage of this economic influx as well. So, you know, and that's what I mean by a real-time example. It doesn't, black agenda doesn't necessarily mean reparations. And I say that as a person who is pro-reparations, but I'm also very pragmatic and very realistic. That is something that they can all promise and spend the next 50 years saying, oh, we're talking about it.
Yeah, as long as they keep doing the studies, as long as they keep putting the monies up for the studies.
Yeah.
Right.
They'll put the money up for the studies, and they'll give the NAACP $1 million.
Right. Since Nick said that, Kevin, do you mind playing the clip we have in reference to that?
All right, here we go. If you're listening to the Middleman Talk Show online, you can call in at 516-387-1542. Press the number one if you would like to get in our conversation tonight. The lines are open, so check out this clip. What black voters want in 2020.
Study is outlining what black Americans want in 2020. The think tank Third Way and the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies commissioned a series of focus groups in Atlanta, Detroit, and Philadelphia, followed by a survey of 1,200 black voters and non-voters. The biggest takeaway was described as something, quote, self-evident to most black Americans, but unfortunately something that goes too often overlooked by political pundits, policymakers, campaigns, and the press alike. Black people are not monolithic. Antoine Seawright is a CBS News political contributor and Democratic strategist. He joins me now from Columbia, South Carolina, to discuss this research. All right, Antoine, there is a lot of territory covered in this report, but I want to start with location. The survey found that a majority of black Americans live in the suburbs, small towns, or rural areas outside of urban areas. What did you make of that?
Oh, I think that's spot on. Look, I'm from South Carolina. I grew up in rural South Carolina. And having done campaigns in 38 states across this country, specializing in focusing on African-American voters, I totally understand what this survey is saying. I think it's spot on. But the real question for Democrats is, how do we take this information and turn it into a winning strategy for elections to come? what we do know is the most loyal voting bloc in the Democratic Party are African-American voters. That's been proven time and time again. And what the survey has said to us is, one, black voters are not monolithic. Two, they have not pledged their allegiance to any particular political party. And number three, they want to be courted and have a relationship built with them. And I think that's something the Democratic Party has to consider. And if you are a Democratic entity, a candidate or a committee, there's no way in hell you can ignore this information being put out and want to be successful in elections to come.
Yeah, I would imagine there are probably a lot of strategists poring over the details of this report. Well, according to the researchers, one topic that came up unprompted in nearly every focus group was gentrification. 69% of survey respondents say the cost of living in their neighborhood is going up faster than wages. So, Antoine, is this something that is being addressed enough by politicians?
Well, I'm not sure. It's not one of those things that pops up sexy on political surveys when you think about the national perspective. But when you think about local elections, and I oftentimes remind people, the closer your government is to you, the more important it is for you. When you think about local elections, this issue is a top priority and should be a top priority, particularly for municipal elections all around the country. And what we've seen over the past three or four election cycles, we've seen an increase and African American leadership at the municipal level. So I'm hopeful that will then translate or turn into really grabbing this issue by the horns and wrestling with it in a real way.
So nearly 8 in 10 respondents self-identified as Democrats, but not all in the same way. Fewer than half of Black Americans consider themselves, quote, strong Democrats. A third say they are a weak Democrat or independent leaner, and 22% say they're not a Democrat at all. So as a Democratic candidate, how do you appeal to someone who doesn't consider themselves a strong Democrat?
Well, I can tell you what, you better treat the African-American vote as an investment, not an expense. And I think that this should be a sound, loud alarm for the Democratic Party to no longer take the most loyal constituency you have for granted and make some real long and short-term investments. And if we do not, it presents a real opportunity for the other side to make their case to African-American voters about why they think they should be well-positioned to receive their vote. And we've been saying this until we're blue in the face as African-American voters. Do not take us for granted. Don't just show up to our communities a month out and call it GOTV. Do not just show up to our churches 2 weeks out and call it Get Out the Vote. But spend time. Treat us like a real relationship. Treat us like you would treat every other constituency in the political election. Because I wrote about this, and I think I sent it to you, Lane.
You did.
For some elections, for some people, elections are a choice. For other ones, they are an urgency. For African-American voters, every election is an urgency.
So overall, African-Americans are more interested in voting in 2020 than 2016, which saw a significant drop in black turnout. 40% say their top reason for voting is to get rid of President Trump. Do you see that statistic as an advantage to any particular candidate in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination?
I don't, because as I've said to you many times on air, surveys or polls are simply a snapshot of the time. And in this environment, the temperature and the mood changes for so many different reasons. So while I do think Trump can be a motivating factor, if we follow that up with identifying his failure from a policy perspective and the impact it has had on African-American communities, I think it can be used as a motivating factor. But I don't think it will be the total motivating factor for Democrats to turn out African-American voters in next year's election.
Well, President Trump has staked much of his case for re-election on the state of the economy. But among Black Americans, 27% feel their personal finances have gotten worse over the past 2 years, compared to 22% who feel their standing has improved. So, Antoine, how do you see those numbers? What should we take away from that?
Look, I think that sometimes Republicans think that cute talking points sometime will run the day. I oftentimes remind people, forget about trying to make ends meet. There are people who look like me who are working 2 and 3 jobs hoping that ends will meet. And that's the story of our day. We've always started this game 10 points behind every other community. That's been from the beginning of time. And so when the unemployment rate is 5% in certain communities, it's 10 and 15% in others. And no one can forget that. And while the Republicans want to hang their hats on a low unemployment rate, that does not mean the working poor is not suffering. That does not mean people who look like me are sitting up on the edge of their bed at night and laying, trying to figure out how to make tomorrow work for them and their families. And so I think that that's so important for not only Republicans to understand, but for the media and for Democratic candidates and messaging purposes to understand.
All right, and that was a clip on what black voters want. So basically, you know, from that clip, give me what I deserve. Give me what we need, all right? Don't be out here playing with my time and my emotions. Like, that's what we hear. And then we get a smooth over all the time, just like the guy said. Like, you throw out those easy numbers to say that, you know, employment rate is this, or look how much money, you know, black people are making right now compared to what they were making. But even though money is being made, the economy is getting more expensive, right? People are still struggling. We're still struggling. Like, we're not, the wealth gap is not even getting as near as close as it should. And even if you look at the tax cuts that Trump put out in his presidency, they only benefited who? The rich. The rich.
Yeah.
So how you gonna get my vote, man?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. I think that one of the biggest ways that we can do this is to go in it with an open mind. See, what makes black people so integral to the Democratic Party and what once made it so integral to the Republican Party is that we do block vote. Largely, we do block vote. However, I will say this. Bob Johnson, the founder of BET, he once said how we should approach politics is no permanent friends, no permanent enemy, only permanent solutions. And I think that if we take that aspect into it, I think we can start affecting, because there are going to be situations where, you know what, you are going to, because let's be honest, there are a lot of things about black people that line up with the Republican Party. Black people were largely Republican. Black people are largely fiscally conservative, religiously conservative.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things that line up with the Republican Party. We just can't get over y'all doing racist stuff.
Right.
We can't.
When they do that, they always come in with it with a patriotic, Christian-based type presentation of it.
Well, and here's the thing about it. It's the narrative that's involved in it. Because let's be honest,
that is
and
correct.
I'm going to say
that's
this, and this could be a generalization, and I know we got a caller, but I just want to say this. This could be a generalization for what black people in America have gone through since 1619. You cannot find a group that loves America more than us. Because what we have endured, we, as they say, mm-hmm. use my language, we built this bitch. What we have endured, and to only be 55 years free, even though our generation spanned most of the wealthy majority community in this country right now, nobody loves America more than we do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
But they sell it. They sell it. And that's why I say don't play with my emotions. Because every time it's voting season, you get those showboaters, right? You get those smooth talkers and everything, right? Like, even with the concept of where we are right now, okay? We're left with who? Joe Biden, right? We're left with Trump, all right? I'm not voting for Trump. Guess who's left? I got to go with what's left. But he's not saying anything to make me say, I am all for you, or I'm all for the other person. That's the thing. Because even with people that don't have, you know, go ahead. I know we got a call. My bad.
Yeah, man. T. Schmidt out in Phoenix, Arizona. What's going on, brother?
Man, I'm good. How you fellas doing today?
Man,
doing well.
You see the passion going on today about this particular subject.
Yeah, y'all already know how I feel, man. I got people block me before. All right, here's the thing, right? It's like this. We got to get this notion out of our heads that the Republicans, I'm not talking about the brothers, I'm speaking in general, that Republicans are the only racist ones. The Democrats are just as racist. If they weren't as racist and they really cared about black people like that, you really think they would have changed some of this stuff by now? Or Joe Biden wouldn't have co-authored the 94 crime bill and bragged about it, called it Biden's law? Or he even made slick comments about the black folks' Lord and Savior, Barack Hussein Obama. You know, he's a Democrat. The problem is that...
Because of President Obama. Excuse my baby. Go ahead.
Honestly, a mongoose could run for president if a Democrat and black folks didn't vote for him. Every other group, this is one beat of me living in Phoenix. We got Mexicans here that will straight up say, "What are you going to do for us?" What the black folks say, "Well, you know, they may not be able to, and, you know, and local election, you ain't asking for nothing there either." Here's the problem, right? Other group's not afraid to make white people mad. We still afraid of making white folks mad because we can damn the hearts and minds. Yeah, damn the hearts and minds, right? They know what they did. They don't care. You know, they have 1,000 years of being heartless barbarians. That's how they are. We don't look at it from a business voting is business. It is a business exchange. It's that we hire you to do this job. If you got hired on your job right now, if you don't do your job, you got hired based on a promise that you can fulfill these duties in your job description. After the 90 days or even a year, the boss man want to hear, "Oh, they blocked me. They won't let me turn this assignment in." They will fire you and put somebody else in there. We don't do that. And we don't – it's like – Biden hasn't even campaigned to us.
Well, okay, so Smitty, I know you're out in Phoenix, right? I was actually in Phoenix earlier this year, organizing for the Move On campaign out there. You guys got Senator McSally out there. I really cannot stand her. There was a group, and I can't remember the name, but it was largely older black women that literally every Tuesday, if you go out there this Tuesday to Senator McSally's office at about 10 o'clock, they're going to be out there. They are out there literally protesting every Tuesday and have been doing so for the past 132 weeks. I say that for this. I think it's high time. One of our callers, Bill, talked about this, about bridging the gap with generations, where we take some of the activism from the past and apply it to the technology now. Because the one thing I didn't see was a lot of younger people. And to your point, you'll get the people that say, "Well, you know, the Democrats are this, that," but then you'll get the folks that's just like, "Well, man, it's not going to matter anyway." And that to me is more dangerous than the people who are saying that it's more dangerous. The people that are saying it's not going to matter are more dangerous to me than the people that are just like, "Well, I mean, you know, they're doing something for us." So I think there has to be a bit of action that goes along with that, which is why I appreciate, you know, if the folks going to block you, maybe let them block you. Because guess what? They're not going to do anything anyway.
Here's the thing, right? Because people know me, because I even criticized President Obama, I didn't like. And I didn't vote for him in 2012. And I know I lost a black card. I know. I'm the one black person that actually has more pictures of my family than the Obamas. But anyway, but here's the thing. These politicians, they come to every other group with financial tangibles. They come at us as, "Oh, Lord Jesus, they're going to lock you in chains. Trump is terrible." Although we have never gotten our due of wealth. And part of the problem is that when the civil rights generation, when the civil rights came in, it should have been black rights. Because civil means everybody can hop in who isn't a white man, including white women, and they sleep in the same bed as said white men. So we have to be specific. We have to be firm. We have to say, look, it's like, one, stop listening to this media that want to blame black folks Trump being in office. White women voted for him in the majority. White majority of white people vote Republican and vote for Trump. But the Democrats, think about this. They know they need the black vote to get in office. The Republicans don't need the black vote to get in office. So why in the hell are they're so arrogant that the Democrats still won't speak to what our needs are? Because our number one, see, the issue, one issue with us is we're afraid to say what our number one issue is. That's being the poorest people in the country. Yes, you may have a nice little house in your neighborhood, but ask somebody in your family, five black folks, can they get you $100 right now, cash money?
Can't do it.
They can't. Because,
can't do it.
Because,
right. Can't do it.
Yeah.
But
I'll say this and I'll shut up. I'll say this and I'll shut up.
I can say this. Oh, go ahead.
I'll say this and I'll be quiet. The problem also is that I'm big on getting reparations. I was upset when Obama didn't do it. And I'm from Montgomery, Alabama, and I grew up thinking, why the hell we even fought to get back on the bus? They didn't want us there anyway. But we got to understand, like, our wealth. We got to understand having wealth will cure a lot of problems with us, crime, poverty, family, school, all that. And I'll shut up now and make me a drink.
Man, she made it on fire.
You made my point. What I really believe is, why, and I'll take this back to Brother Malcolm, it is ridiculous of us. Why are we keep begging them for a seat instead of taking our seat? When you're fighting the devil, you got to become the devil. And so we're always, can you please, can you do this for me? Can you give me? Can you give me? No, take it back. Take it back. Say, I want this. And we start taking our position back instead of kowtowing and backing up and expecting the wolf to
right.
be nice to us. It's ridiculous.
Or let's.
And another thing
that's
strategic
about it.
Correct.
Go ahead, Al.
And to build on what Nick was saying, you know, I was going to say something in reference to being strategic. Like, when, if I'm running for office, what I'm going to do is I'm going to present the bills and all the laws and stuff that have been passed on the last person watch, right? And I'm going to show them, the voters out there, who they voted for, what they voted on the list, on the paper, so they can see where their money is going to or being taken from, or to see how their vote affected and why this particular person either did or did not vote the way he's supposed to be voting. Because we have to know these things. Like, we have to understand, like what's going on behind the scenes in our local government that can affect us. We have to make sure we're putting the proper people in office who are going to actually follow suit with what we need. Because, like I said earlier, don't play with my emotion for my vote. And that's what a lot of people are doing. We got to make a change. We cannot continue to go down that route. We can't.
We got another caller.
And also to all of our listeners out there, when you do call in, the phone lines are open, 516-387-1542. Once you get finished with your comment, press 1. If you want to get back into the conversation, press 1 again, and we'll be glad to bring you back in. But we got our caller, Bill. What's going on, brother?
Bill.
What's up? How you all doing today?
What's up, Bill? Doing well.
All right, Bill.
Gene, I want to touch on what you was just saying before I was brought in. I think that it's somewhat wrong. I'm not saying it's completely wrong. Malcolm was telling us to stop trying to fight for a seat at the table because they don't want us there. I more so think that he was trying to tell us to build our own table, to just do away with them. They don't want us there. Forget about it. Go ahead and do our own thing. I personally believe that us as black people, if we need to do anything, we need to switch over to the independent party. I think because at this point here, the Democrats don't care about us. And like the last caller just said, if they did care about it, they would have, this wouldn't be up for discussion. Like you just said, we wouldn't have to wait 50 years for it's still a debate still going. I think that if they want us as bad as they want us, we need to play with their emotions. They want our vote. Well, hey, come on. Show me what you can do for me before I can give you my vote. And apparently they haven't shown that yet. Okay, you put a few black people here and there. Oh, you put a black person on a on the impeachment committee, which is already a failed purpose anyways. Oh, wow, that's going to rile up the black people for a little bit. And then, oh, wow, you want to throw a black person in here. Oh, that's going to rile them up for a little bit. But what overall are you going to do to help us impact our generations to come? That I don't think that they're doing that. I think they're just doing they're just throwing things in there here and there just for a little while to, just to shut us up. And then they go on, hey, this will carry them over for about 5 or 6 years, and then we're just going to get some. We're going to go back to what our agenda is, or we're just going to do whatever it is that we want to do.
Right.
Let me say this before we move on. Like, I do agree with you. I'm not saying that, you know, we should – well, actually, I am. I'm saying we shouldn't beg for a seat at the table, but like you said, we should create our own. Why do we place the burden of our agenda on the Democratic Party, who's shown and proved that, that it's not a priority to them? We need to create
because
our own party.
Because the moment you meet with the Republicans.
It doesn't have to be the Black People Party. It could be a party of who hold people who hold the same interests.
Well, yes. Correct. Well, that's what got MLK killed. Let's start there. MLK didn't get killed for the I Have a Dream speech. He got killed for the Other America speech. He got killed when he was organizing working class black and white in Memphis. So doing that is what got him killed, because once he made them realize, hey man, you just as screwed up as us, then it was like, oh no, he's got to go. I will say this though, one thing that if we're going to entertain all options, we have got to stop shaming black people for meeting with Republicans. History shows us this. The author of Black Capitalism was Richard Nixon, who is arguably worse than Trump. The reason that Richard Nixon is considered the author of Black Capitalism is because he threw behind his full support of the expansion and funding of black banking and black schools. Now, it wasn't an effort to stop desegregation in its last leg. But you know what? If you're gonna fully fund, like my mother was the last class of the black school that was in our neighborhood, and she'll say in a second, if your racist intent is to keep me from being from white people, and you are going to fully fund my school, go right ahead. Because now we're in a situation where black schools are not funded on the same level as white schools, where black banks are not supported on the same level as white banks. So that's what I mean by being strategic and be the same type of manipulative that they are. If they're going to be racist, here's the thing. You're not going to stop them from being racist. But if you can use it to your advantage to further our agenda, I don't see the problem with that. I don't personally care if Trump says something crazy or Bloomberg says something crazy. You know what? Just like Bill Maher said, your money is good.
Right.
Your money is good. And if I can use it to forward and help my people, then that's exactly what we need to do.
I wonder if that's how Steve Harvey felt after he left from that meeting with him.
You know, I'm curious.
We didn't give him a chance to explain. We called him a coon and a sellout and all this. We called Jim Brown a coon and a sellout. One of the biggest black activists of our parents' lifetime.
But you know, I am very curious, and this is to our historian listeners, if we have anybody who's a historian, and Nick, you might know, Dr. King and the whole civil rights movement, what was the plan? Like after, what was the after plan is what I've been always curious about. You know, why wasn't our agenda a part of, you know, okay, we can go to the same bathroom and drink out of the same fountain. And what happens after that? And I think that's what happened. That, you know, now we elected a black president. Okay, so what happens after that? Who historically, who has been in charge of the after plan, and who is assigned to that now?
Here's the problem. The problem is people only listen to one aspect of the I Have a Dream speech. And it, that one soundbite took off.
They never mentioned
the fact in the I Have a Dream speech when he talked about reparations. They never mentioned the fact in the I Have a Dream speech when he talked about the continued protest of police brutality. Shout out to you, Colin Kaepernick. They only concentrate on little black boys and little white girls
to
play together, which is why he turned around and said, I feel like I have led my people into a burning bush. My grandmother used to say that integration was the worst thing to happen to black people.
Yep.
And I absolutely believe she was right. That's what killed our black business districts like Black Wall Street, Auburn Avenue, the Lower Ninth Ward, Chicago, the French Quarter, Harlem. That's what killed it. It was integration. The moment that we started spending our money outside of our community, it wasn't the Tulsa riots, because they rebuilt some of those buildings in Black Wall Street still stand to this day. They rebuilt it financially. It thrived longer than the original iteration of Black Wall Street. But what happened was, the moment they said, you can come downtown and you can shop with the whites, we went running, because we have been indoctrinated in us from the very beginning that white is right. That's what happened. They concentrated on one aspect of the I Have a Dream speech and made that Dr. King's mantra.
You know, Nick, one thing I want to say, and just my thought process, and Gene, I appreciate you for bringing that point up. You know, we do have to start thinking of what's next, what's going to happen. Because when I look at the generation, even like when Bill, he's called in a couple of times and made some excellent points, for each generation that comes along, things change, mentality change. The way that they do things change. So I'm looking at a generation right now where, you know, they are not taking too much stuff and they're not falling along like how we said earlier, a generation before us and a part of our generation, they blocking votes. I mean, they vote in blocks. So I'm looking at the new mind state of the younger people now. They're more tuned into, okay, what are the issues we need to be focusing on? What do we need to be attentive to make sure that our people are good? But I don't think our old leaders are still instilling in them some of the things to help them push them over the hump to make sure that they're making powerful comments and powerful efforts. But it seems like right now, man, it's okay. We're here. What do we do? Where do we go? That's what I'm trying to say.
I can tell you this much: the way things are going now, prepare for another Trump presidency, another 4 years of Trump. Unless something drastically changes, the way things are going now, prepare for that. And the best way to prepare for that is, one, concentrate on your local and state elections. Number two, take advantage of the programs that he's put in to disenfranchise white neighborhoods and advocate for those same local and state electives to move those into our neighborhood. Because we might not be able to overcome the Electoral College, but I'm going to tell you right now, 500 votes in a city council or state senate or state house rep makes a whole lot of difference.
Make a difference.
And you can make 500 calls and organize 500 people.
Yeah.
Use the things Dave Carson's and Vision Centers for public housing. Use the Opportunity Zone. Both these people that are arm's length away from us out of office, we might not be able to put an independent or Green Party or any other whatever major party in the White House, but we can put one on the city council. We can put one in the mayor's office. We can put one in the state house, and we can put one in the state senate.
Right. I think we got T. Smitty. Yeah, we got T. Smitty want to get back into the comments. Here we go. Smitty, you had another comment?
I know you guys were going to shut it down. I was going to say this also. Even with voting, it's like those local elections. We still have to hold them accountable. And I'm from Montgomery, Alabama, they elected a first black mayor. And I'm like, everybody's partying. Everyone's dancing. But it's like, okay, in 4 years, you have to reassess this. We have to look at it as a business. But I also think, like, people saying, like, I know the brother saying Trump's going to win again. I think he's going to win again 3 years ago, and I say he's going to win the first term. It's because we aren't like our grandparents and our parents. Like, I don't know what rich guys are. I know fellas there from the South like me. Our parents had the government job. Even the military not taking as many as used to. You'd be a cop, a firefighter, or had a job at the plant waiting on you to lose a decent life. Those things aren't there for people like those kids nowadays. And college is more expensive. They don't have that same, can't even buy a house now with the same quality of life. And so these young people are looking at us like, hold on,
we're not getting any of this, but you want us to vote for you, and we're struggling to pay off student loans for a job that a guy that Quick Trip makes more, and he just walk in and work at the gas station. So I say this, and I run, but we have it's like you have to look at it like both parties. You got to earn my vote. I don't care if you meet with Trump. He's the damn president. Right. You have to meet with the man in office. And if you're mad about folks meeting with Trump, why weren't you mad that nobody met with Obama? You're supposed to meet with everybody. And the man, because here's the thing. Everybody's saying, well, they ain't doing nothing for us. If you didn't ask the last guy to do anything for you, these white folks going to be like, why the hell are we going to do anything? You didn't ask the black guy to do anything for you. So you got to be consistent with demanding tangible economic policy for us. Hey, you guys have a great weekend, man. Thanks for letting me on.
Hey, man, any little thing, and to Smitty's point, because we didn't demand anything of President Obama in that fashion, any little thing that Trump would do, he tries to tout it as I did it better than Obama. I did it because when you look at the funding of HBCUs, because we didn't hold President Obama accountable for that, he could say, oh, well, I funded HBCUs at a higher rate than he did. And you got to give him that win because, unfortunately, he did. Now, I will say this because I lived in Montgomery for 8 years. I attended Alabama State. With Stephen Reed, I will say this. The people in Montgomery right now are holding him accountable, and they are on his neck. I don't say that as anything wrong with the – I love the Reed family. His father, Joe Reed, paid me on my very first paid campaign was his city council race in 1999. What I will say is this. We have gotten to a point where the vocal minority of the problems facing the Democratic Party with black people have become louder and louder and louder. And if they don't do anything this time, it's going to very much so be like the gubernatorial election in Mississippi last year. Because right now, the Democratic Party in Mississippi right now is pretty much dead. It's pretty much dead. So that's just my take on it.
I'm agreeing with a lot of what Smitty was saying. Now, I'm not going to sit up there. Me personally, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. I'm not really falling into that little category left or right. But like we said the whole show, your policies got to resonate with me. Mm-hmm. If it affects me. You know what I'm saying? I need to know what can I do to make sure that I can benefit from this effect. But a lot of people don't understand that. They want to go with, well, my grandma voted Republican or my grandma voted Democrat, and that's the only way I'm going to go. We shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. We should never do that. When Biden comes up, we should definitely, with this party, we need to start demanding, like what Bill was saying last week, Twitter. We got to, man, these people paying attention to this new electronic age. They're paying attention to Twitter. They're paying attention to all these different means of contacting them. So we can use that to make our voice louder, opposed to sitting back and waiting for them to do something, and they never do.
And we have a responsibility, I think, also to our children. When I was growing up, one thing that my dad did to me is that we read the paper together. And we would talk about what's in the paper. We would talk about articles and where they sat in the paper as far as, you know, were they on the front page or the back page. We would talk about, you know, why I would feel this way, and he would challenge me on my thoughts and what I would think, you know, and how I got to those conclusions. And I think more parents need to start having conversations like that with their children and getting them early, you know, introduced into the political process. Because you know, it's our kids that are going to pass on and be the next voters. And the more disengaged that our children are, is the more disengaged our people will be.
That is correct.
Well, you know, one thing, too, if I can quickly say this, I agree with you, Jen. The thing is, we have to start a grassroots movement because we got a lot of people that don't know anything about politics. Barack Obama, his presidency awakened our population. I mean, for the black community. It awakened us because a lot of people, even though they didn't even know what was going on, they saw someone that was looking like them. And then some took the initiative beyond that to start researching things. And that right there can lead to them learning more, teaching their kids more, And it, I mean, it's a great time and a great opportunity for us to learn, even though we're dealing with what we're dealing with now with our country. But it's still a great opportunity for us to be engaged and also educate ourselves to know what's going on in the political realm.
That is,
Kev, I got to push back a little bit on that. I got to push back a little bit only because I think there was a general awareness and an inspiration when President Obama took office. But if you look at the number of civic engagement and it's particularly young people running for office, it exploded after Trump because he was the very antithesis of President Obama. And it was like, oh my God, I was a little bit sleep because I thought the country had progressed to this point, and then they went way back with Donald J. Trump. And I think that is what got a lot of people awakened.
I can agree with that.
That's what got a lot of people awakened. Because it was like, oh man, we've been progressing. We've been progressing and progressing. And we have, let's be honest, we got a black dude named Barack Hussein Obama as president.
In office.
Okay.
Right.
I can get a little bit comfortable now because we've progressed. And in 2016, you know what they said? No, you didn't. Run it back.
Right.
That's what they did.
We got to make the change, people. We got to make the change. We got to get out there and vote. We got to understand what we're voting for and why we're voting for what we need. Educate your family. Educate your friends. Have healthy conversations.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. We're not going to believe in the same things, but we all need the same basic needs. When you think about the basic needs, everything else is not that much important after that.
Yeah.
So understand everybody's going to have your own opinions about finance, school, education, you know, housing, all of that. Yes. But at the end of the day, we should all be living a safe, happy, healthy, normal life. Because right now, we are like, we got a big black eye on the United States right now. A big black eye.
It ain't got to be a black eye, man. It ain't got to be a black
it's
eye.
It's an orange eye. We got a big
it's
orange.
Orange.
It's an orange eye. Use orange.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to echo Kevin's point at the beginning of the show, for everybody that's listening, you know, first, all politics is local. If you are living in a city and you do not know who your city councilman is, who your alderman is, you are missing out because I can tell you right now, working on the professional side of it, the opposition, they know who their local reps are. They engage with their local reps, and they get things done by their local reps to help enhance them. 90% of the things that affect you on a day-to-day basis are done based on your local and state elected official. There's no such thing
don't
as
know
an
the
off-year
DA is
election.
That's right.
Thank you.
I don't
the
think
sheriff.
People know the DA. That's an elected office. The person who's locking up y'all family is an elected official. You don't like what they're doing, get somebody else.
Get them up out of
exactly.
Hey, I know normally we'll be shutting the show down right now, but we're going to do a little bit longer because I really want to pose, I think we need to touch on this question right here as far as, you know, with coronavirus going on and the election coming up. I know in the state of Georgia right now, we've received a lot of mailers for absentee voting, and you can vote through the mail. And they're also possibly entertaining electronic voting. How do y'all really feel about that? And do you trust it?
I mean, we did the census electronically this year. So why not? I mean, they got everybody's address from the census. You can send that right back out with a similar link and make it easy for people to utilize. It does not have to be all fancy and unique. Just put the candidate's name there, click send. That's it. That's all you got to do.
Well, let's be honest. I'll take a chance on the mail because I've had to vote. You know, you guys know I work out of state a lot. So I've had maybe the last three elections, I've had to vote absentee, the last three presidential elections. What I'll say is this. I trust electronic about as much as I trust paper ballots because they screw those up too. There's going to be a screw up. But I will say this. When you look statistically, there is a portion of this country, a demographic in this country, that votes absentee more than any other group. That is black people.
it is not lost on me that just a couple of weeks ago, when this was brought up, the words out of President Trump's mouth was, if we go with an absentee option, if we go with mail-in ballots, Republicans will lose. And that should tell you everything
yep.
that you need to know about the motivations of this administration. That should tell you absolutely everything you need to know. It is no more trusted or no less trusted than going to the polls and voting on a rigged machine. We've seen that happen. Oh, I pressed the button for this person, but ironically, this person's name came up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's all flawed. It's all flawed, but make no mistake about it. We're the number one demographic for absentee voting. We're the number one demographic for early voting, and they know that if that is something that is done countrywide,
it's a problem.
They're going to lose.
It's a problem. Yeah.
And they will do everything in their power to stop it.
I'm worried more so about, like, the machines. Like you said, Nick, you have so many faulty machines. With the mailing, that part, you know, I understand you've done that a lot, but y'all seen stories about post workers that will throw a whole big thing of mail in the bushes and go take it somewhere and dump it in an empty cul-de-sac. So I don't know.
And
man,
that's why you got certified. That's why you got certified mail. You
exactly.
That's why you got certified. Anything I deal with the IRS, everything is certified. You can't say you lost it. If I have a creditor, certified mail. You can't say you lost
it.
Certified mail exists for
that's
a reason.
It.
And I will also say this. It's also not lost on me when it comes to things like certified mail. See, a lot of this stuff is connected. And I may be a bit of a conspiracy theorist on this, but a lot of this is connected. Why is it that this administration is so hell-bent on defunding the U.S. Postal Service?
I mean,
you
know
who
worked
why.
There? Who worked there? Who's the biggest?
Who
most of the employees
there,
are?
But where? Who works there? But let's be honest. Look at the timing of it. Because if they do go in with mail-in ballots,
yeah.
who's gonna
what?
Get hit the
yep.
hardest?
Yep.
When it comes
oh.
to getting things mailed in and stuff getting. And like I said, call me a conspiracy theorist, and that's fine. But I don't think that everything in politics, all politics is local, and it's also all intentional. There's nothing that's done by mistake.
True story,
man.
Very much true story. I appreciate y'all. What about you, Jen? You gonna do electronic voting or mailing?
I'm mailing mine in because I'm not going to no coronavirus polling station when it gets the coronavirus.
I feel you.
I will be
well,
doing
look,
it
man.
From my home.
I'm gonna tell
I
you
will
that,
not.
Plans in place, man. I do not want to have some conversations over the summer talking about they still trying to figure out how they're going to do voting. The plans need to be put in place or starting to be put in place right now. Not
but you know
July.
What? This is where I think you got to call people out. Now, I'm the one who will, in a minute, I will, you know, my congressman is, what's it? Well, he's one of Trump's minions. What's his name with the little glasses? The whole name just flew
yeah,
out of my mind. The one
Mnuchin.
No. It'll come back to me. It just flew out of my mind. But anyway,
right.
I will. If you don't know who yours is, you can get on the U.S. Congressman site, and they will direct you to who your congressperson is. Write them a letter. I'm telling you, write them a letter, call, leave a message. They will call you back. I just called the other day about something, and I left a message about how I was upset about something, and someone called me back. Do it. Do it. That is their job. I think what was this Smitty who said, you know, this is their job. They work for us. Call them
mm-hmm.
and say, what are you doing? What is the plan? Is this going to be in place? Are you saying when you get up there with Congress, are you lobbying for a decision to be in place soon? What are you guys doing? Call them. Call them up and ask.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. We just leave it up. We don't say anything. We don't call. We don't write letters. We don't do anything. Call them up.
And you do. And so everyone also knows, to Jen's point, you know, it says prior to the shelter in place and everything with COVID-19, you can also request an in-person meeting with them. That is
yep.
your right,
so,
your congressman. And, okay. and Stephen Palazzo, I'll go ahead and say it publicly, is the laziest, dumbest, worst congressman that we have ever had in my district, in the 4th district. He is the worst. All he does is fish and retweet Trump. He's the absolute worst. Republicans don't even like him. It's amazing. But if we do not hold them accountable, they can sit in those positions forever. Don't forget, we got a guy sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue who ran on term limits. All of a sudden, he want all his boys in there lifetime. He ain't really worried about term limits anymore.
Doug Collins. I just left a message for Doug Collins. Getting a little bit off topic, the stimulus package. A lot of our people were left out of the stimulus package. They weren't. Mm-hmm. They were left out of the stimulus package, and it's not right, and we should say something about it. And our black men, a lot of our black men were left out of the stimulus package because of child support.
Yep. Yeah.
What if you are current on your child support, but you got behind on it, and you're more than $500 behind? If you are $700 behind, they took your stimulus check.
Yep, they can take the whole thing, not just the $700, and give you the difference. See, and
right.
that's where they get you. They not just the balance; they can take the whole thing. I think it's important that we do a show that talks about this stimulus package, because I know we have a lot of listeners who are self-employed, they're independent contractors, they're black business owners. You know, mm-hmm. I think that we definitely need to do that and kind of delve into that, because there are a lot of opportunities. I was talking with my CPA about this, that we are just missing out on right now. They had the first round of the business package is going out. This is something that's absolutely unprecedented, what they're doing right now, and we could really benefit from it. And because they came down on those companies like Ruth's Chris and all those other major restaurant chains and made them give back the money, the second round of funding is already set at $484 billion. The money that those other companies got and they're making them return will be added to the top of that. And the deadline on it is June 15th. I think we need to go in serious depth about how we as a community can benefit from that.
Yeah, I agree. We try to be as informative as we can over here. Go ahead and take it, Al.
Hey, we definitely want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Middlemen Show today with Kevin, Al, Jen, and Nick. We had a great discussion on, will Biden be enough in 2020? So we discussed our views and what we want as far as on the black agenda. What should we do? How can we get our word out there? We also discussed, you know, the voting process and what it should look like next for us. So definitely tune in to a Middlemen Show next Sunday. Well, we will definitely have another great discussion, and thank you for lending an hour and 12 minutes out your day to listen to the Middlemen Radio. We appreciate y'all.
Most definitely. And if this is your first time listening to us, and we're going to make sure that y'all know more about us, but we've been around since 2008, you know, really before podcasts really hit. So we've been doing this type of format. We definitely appreciate each and every one of you who've been listening to us for a long time, and all of you guys that have just recently started listening to us. So we want, if you see our link on Facebook or any of the podcast sites or any of the websites, Apple, iTunes, whatever, share it. Get it out to your friends. Let them know about us, because we definitely want to build up our following. Right now in our Facebook group, we have 600 members, 600 plus members on the Middlemen Talk Show family page. We want you to join our family. And if you have any anything you want us to discuss, make sure you let us know about it. Email us. We are themiddlemen@gmail.com. It's incorrect, but it's correct spelling when I would say it like that. But make sure you guys let us know about any of the topics that you want us to talk about, and we will be here every Sunday to make sure that we can discuss it. So we thank each and every one of y'all for listening to us again, as Al always say. I ain't mean to take your catchphrase, Al. Yes.
Man, listen, man, I'm going to have to go ahead and copyright that. You know what I'm saying? So you can use it.
Let me think about this. Hold on, let me think about it.
He Melania'd you.
I know. Like, man. I guess he Jordan, I'm Pippen. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
you know
wow.
What?
Yeah.
This is Kevin Gordon.
You Melania him, man.
Hey,
we gotta make sure y'all join us next Sunday. We'll be back.
Yep.
Little Man Talk Show.
Yep.
Bye, everybody.
Peace.